Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello, I'm trying to lean forward without making a noise on that. There we go. Hello.
Oh, is that what you were smiling at, Matt? I was like, I didn't say anything funny,
it's
did
a squeaky
I?
Chair.
I see. Right, yes, welcome to this probably very chaos-packed podcast.
Is it very chaotic today?
It's very chaotic because he has returned.
He has, yeah.
He has. There was a bit of a silence there, as if like...
I was trying to think, is it about me? I've been here a long time.
No, Abaddon is back. We'll talk a bit more about all the big revelations of the last 7 days in the news segment for That Is Where It Lives. So yeah, that's all to look forward to. We've also got, because we knew Abaddon was coming, we set this week's top three as our top three villains.
Yeah, I've got some controversial ones in here.
I've got... No, I don't think mine are very controversial. One is kind of borderline, depends who you ask.
My number one is Gene Steel Cultist on bikes with demo chargers.
So yes, we've got that later on. We'll also be reading out your picks as well. We had quite a few on Twitter.
We did, it was a flurry of responses we had.
Very, very busy. So yeah, we've got all that to look forward to. But before all that, we're going to do a bit of a hobby update because we are in a March and we're currently working, or we should be working... on our 40k armies.
Yeah.
Our second month of 40k. So, Matt, how has your hobby progress been going?
So, I did a little bit of a surge in painting after last week's podcast to finish off my corn list for the Throne of Skulls. Managed to build and paint a war shrine in a day, which was pretty cool. And then tried it out the following day against you.
Yes, and it did very, very well, Matt.
I've kind of tuned my list a little bit.
I say that your war shrine itself didn't do a lot in the kind of gaming sense, didn't kill anything, but the buffs it was throwing out,
yeah,
certainly made a difference.
So essentially, I've got the big dragon, Vorgoroth, and Skarlok, the mm-hmm. Skull Host of Khorne, as the centre of the army and most of the points of the army. For my battle line, I've got a block of 20 Reavers, a block of 10 Reavers, and 5 Fleshhounds for dispelling duty and running on objectives and stuff. And the rest of the army is pretty much designed around buffing that dragon. Yeah. So we've got a Slaughter Priest, we've got a Blood Stoker, a Blood Secretor, and the War Shrine, I think that's everything. And all those have got various abilities that can make the dragon from, you know, pretty good to absolutely mental.
Yeah. Well, I thought you've been tweaking this list for a while, getting ready for sort of Warhammer Live and Throne of Skulls and things. So I've played it quite a few times, and I've always done okay until the other day.
Yeah.
When you played it with this list with the War Shrine and all the fun buffs and things. And the first game we had was over within just over,
I think you conceded, yeah, end of turn two, and yeah, there was only a unit of evocators left on the board.
Yeah, so we decided to have a second game because that ended so quickly, and I did a little bit better in that, but again, I lost.
You were very, there was a point where you could have won it, and you were very, very unlucky, where your evocators had failed every charge they made pretty much that yeah. day.
Ditch him, Dave. Take something else.
Take something else. No.
Take something with four legs.
Yeah, maybe some Dracolines with evocators on top. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And I think we were looking at your list kind of afterwards, and there's things you can do to kind of make those charges more guaranteed in
yes.
the Stormcast.
Yes, well, I think that when we swing round to Age of Sigmar next time, I'm going to say goodbye to the dragon. And I'm going to include the Knight Vexilio, who I need to pick up, which is the guy with the banner, because he allows me to reroll charges. And also, he has an ability to teleport a Stormcast unit mid-game to anywhere on the board, within obviously outside of the normal parameters, yeah. 9 inches. So he's pretty cool. And on top of that, you can give him a special standard as well for an extra ability.
Yeah,
And then I'm also thinking of taking my first Stormcast Battalion, which I've been toying with for a while, and that's the shooty one, which means I need to take some Castigators, but if they wound something, then my Ballistas get to reroll hits on the same target.
Awesome.
So
that's been the kind of the start of the week, painting them up. There's a few things I need to touch up, but they're pretty much good to go for the tournament. And I've ordered a load of movement trays yesterday from Element Games. So
for the Fire Slayers.
Well, no, for my everything, really. Right. They're all 32mm ones, and I've got, you know, big blocks of demons and marauders and fire slayers, so it's just a lot easier moving units around with movement trays, I find.
Yeah.
So they're on the way, need to paint them up, and then, yeah, army's good to go. And then, yeah, it's Taylor Gamer's 40k month two. So I built my pledge. I was hoping to get it sprayed, but the weather's not been very good the last few days. So I've got 12 Brood Brothers, including the Last Cannon, for shooting Dave's kind of Wraith Lord and stuff.
Probably.
A Sentinel with a Last Cannon for shooting Dave's Wraith Lord. A Nexus for command point recycling. A Ridge Runner for shooting things in the face with its mining laser. And it has a kind of ignore wounds aura for bikes. Because, you know, we all know I like bikes. Taking the Atlan Jackals with demo charges for shenanigans. Taking the Jackal Alphas to buff said Jackals. And then a Goliath for smashing into things. It's probably going to be filled with...
Gene Stealers can go in that, can't
they? Gene Stealers can go in that. I'll probably put Acolytes in it. And that means they can throw demo charges every turn as well. So that takes me to 1,000 points of Gene Stealer Cult, and I think that should be fairly decent.
I think my top three villain is going to be Matt.
Yeah.
my top choice. Don't think that's very controversial. So cool, yeah. So you've been very busy, Matt, all yeah. ready to paint some Gene Stealer Cultists.
Yeah, hopefully the weather holds out the weekend and get these sprayed, because there's, you know, only a few weeks left, really.
Excellent. Now, Jay, you had a lot to paint for Age of Sigmar, so is it fair to say that they've kind of gone into March?
Yeah, but it's not been too bad. I have been continuing with the goblins. I've got probably about, I don't know, 15 left to finish off now, and they're almost done. It's just robes need highlighting and the shields need finishing, so it's another session, I think, and they'll be done. But I've been waiting for the Shadow Spear box anyway for my month 2 pledge, so... I've got some Traitor Guardsmen from the Blackstone Fortress, which I was hoping, like Matt, to spray up and start painting tonight, but the weather's rubbish here, so that'll be the weekend most likely. So my hopefully for month two I'll have the Traitor Guardsmen painted, a unit of Care Space Marines painted, so that's, I've got my troops options in 1,000 points, the Master of Possession, the Demon Engine, and some Obliterators and Greater Possessed.
So. I love those obliterators from Shadowspear.
Yeah, so I think that should give me, with my Harkonnen and Raptors, it should give me 1,000 points to have a few games with. So I'm looking forward to getting those built and painted.
And getting a feel for the army.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've not even picked up the codex yet, so I've not actually written any lists or looked at any rules. I'm sort of waiting to see what comes out this month, and then I'll go from there.
Yeah, cool. Fair enough.
Oh, and also, my oldest son has started painting a Space Marine army.
He started
with a Gravis captain here. It's not too bad, actually.
Yeah, that's really good.
I might get him on the goblins.
That's awesome. Yeah. Is it? I think he's waiting to go Death Watch there with that silver shoulder pad.
Silver shoulder pad, yeah.
Yeah, Death Watch.
And we need to get your boys on the game then, don't we?
That's it. We'll bring them to Warhammer World this year. The middle son tried to paint a Blood Angel, I think. Which, I mean, fair play to him. Blood Angel's a good choice. But I think he's got a bit of work on his brush control a little bit there. But I'll let him. He's only four.
That shade of red looks a bit more word bearer to me.
Word bearers. I always worry about the middle one.
Ace. Well, this so far for March, I've not done. Much the way painting, my Age of Sigmar did overhang slightly into March as well. I had to finish some Liberators off, but they're done now. I undercoated, I managed to find a bit of sunshine last weekend and sprayed my 5 Dire Avengers, and then I also built and sprayed the contents of Starklights in Eldar. So that is the Farseer, the Wraith Lord, the Warwalker, and 5 Wraith Guard, who are built as Wraith Guard this time.
Awesome.
With the Wraith Cannons. So they're all ready to paint. It's just they've not got past the undercoated stage yet, but hope to get on that this weekend.
Awesome.
May start on the Dire Avengers, I think, and get those done first. But I think that it should be quite a good month, because there's quite a few big things in that amount of... in the stuff that I've got.
Well, similar to mine, I've got quite a few things to paint, but a lot of them are big chunky vehicles, so rattle through the Brood Brothers and then the rest of it should be fairly quick.
I find it easy to do when you've got lots of different things to paint as well.
Yeah.
When you've got 60 of the same thing to paint, oh my gosh, that is... But yeah, I'm looking forward to month two as well, because it's only 10 Marines, and then it's a big demon engine, and then it's a character and 2 Terminator type units, so it should be good.
And like both of you, I'm really looking forward to getting the Eldar painted this month, because then I'll have 1,000 points so we can start having some games, recording some footage.
So it's probably worth pointing out to you guys at home. We spoke last week about maybe tweaking how we're going to do it a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to do, rather than keep having it a monetary value, we're going to build it around 500 point chunks per month.
Yeah.
To bring us up to gameable armies. Just because... Sometimes, you know, a £60 kit could be 200 points. You'd have discrepancies in what everyone's got, so...
That's it. Well, like, one Mangler cost me nearly 50 quid.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so
it only has 200 points to my army.
Everyone's still painting the army in chunks, but it means that we can get some games going from
this. Yeah, because... that's going to help as well, I think, because I'm finding... I've not had a game with the Gloomside kits yet. I've no idea how good they are, what list to kind of build. I've not had a game with the Black Legion yet, and I'm doing all this hard work painting it. I want to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's having them on the table and having some games.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So, that about wraps up our intro to this podcast. We still have got quite a bit of content to get through, so we'll move on to the news next. Okay, Matt, news time, and there is some big reveals from this week.
There are. Now, we've been waiting for this for what seems like weeks now, but on Saturday, on pre-order, is Shadow Spear.
Woo!
The brand new battle box for Warhammer 40,000.
Full of brand new minis.
It is. So, we've got two forces in there, the Demonkin and the Vanguard Space Marines.
Yep.
For the Demonkin, it contains 10 Chaos Space Marines, 2 Obliterators, 2 Great Possessed, a Venom Crawler, which is a brand new demon engine, and a Master of Possessions. So I know Jay will be super eager to get those painted up. On the Primaris side, we've got 10 Infiltrators, and I've been looking at these on the Warhammer community site today, and they look amazing.
Are these the guys with the sniper rifles?
No, these are the guys with the bolters that on a hit of 6 do an auto wound.
They're like the Reavers.
Yeah, they're like better Reavers,
right,
yeah.
Right, yep.
And they can basically deep strike.
Isn't a 6 an auto wound on anything anyway?
A 6 to hit.
Oh, a 6 to hit auto wound, right.
Which is really cool. I think it's a mortal wound. I have to double check that, but yeah, it's really
good. It's not a mortal wound, no. It's just a normal wound,
right,
yeah.
Okay, so you can ignore it with Disgusting New Wizard.
But like you were going to go on to say about deep striking, they during deployment, you can deploy them anywhere on the board outside the enemy deployment zone. As long as they're 9 inches away. So, basically 9 inches away from the enemy deployment zone.
That's really good.
Which is really cool. It's a turn one deep strike, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is ace. And like you say, they're awesome.
They look really cool. You also get 3 suppressors, which are the jump pack auto-gunning awesome-looking dudes.
These are the ones that stop Overwatch if they kill a model in a unit. That unit can't Overwatch.
Yeah. See, I think this is the weakest part of the box.
Do you?
And I know the internet has been quite jumping on them as, saying... I'm not saying I fully dislike them, but I'm not sold on these guys.
I quite enjoy how ridiculous they are.
Do you?
I like them as well. I think they're different because you've got Devastated Squads and a mobile heavy weapon squad seems quite cool to me.
Yeah, I can see the Space Marines dropping in these guys, gunning away as they fall down.
I think they're quite nice models myself.
Yeah, I think they look a bit ridiculous. But that's my personal opinion. Anyway.
Controversy there. You also get 3 Eliminators, either new snipers. These look really cool.
Oh, now these are awesome.
They've got different rounds, haven't they? Is it mortise rounds and so that can shoot out of line of sight? And
how does that work? Out of a sniper rifle?
Guided bullets.
Just fire it into the air and it just
it gets a +2 to hit as well if you're firing it at something you can't see. I don't know how that works.
It just doesn't make sense.
I wonder if
it gets rid of cover as well.
I wonder if you could use that to shoot things that haven't come onto the board yet.
Not my Gene Stealer Bikes.
Yeah, Gene Stealer Bikes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really like these models. And then you get a captain, a lieutenant, and a librarian. All the characters look really ace, don't they?
The lieutenant is probably my favourite looking Primaris Lieutenant yet.
He looks a bit like Ultramarine Scout Tellion, is it? Sergeant Tellion.
Yeah. I think he'd be really cool with a load of Reavers graph shooting in.
He'll look really cool with a big demon sword for his torso.
The captain, I think, is cool, but yeah, I think.
I believe he's the same character in the Gravis armour out of Dark Imperium as well.
Oh, is he?
Phoenix, is it? Captain Phoenix.
I'm sure I read somewhere it's the same
guy. Is that
guy.
A promotion?
Could be.
Is that not? I'd say
he's Captain America, isn't he?
Captain, don't it?
Oh, this guy?
No, the new captain. The new captain.
From the novel.
Oh, the new captain. Oh, sorry, right, from the lore.
Just resuited. So, yeah. And the librarian looks ace.
Yeah, and he comes with some new powers, doesn't he, as well, I think?
Yes. Yeah, well, in the box, you get two mini codexes. One for the Vanguard, one for the Demonkin, which includes, you know, warlord traits, psychic powers, all that stuff, presumably points as well.
Are the stratagems in there?
Don't know, possibly. But yeah, you can use these two armies off the bat. You know, we're going to get a box down the line, aren't we, for these, but it's good that you get introductionary kind of codexes in there so you can use them.
Yeah. I remember Dark Imperium was the same. You got a Primaris codex and a Death Guard codex.
And it had points in the back as well.
It did, yeah. And then a few months later, you got full box with all that in. So
it's good that you can use the stuff in the box straight away.
Yeah.
Price point is £105, which makes it, I believe, the most expensive mainline Games Workshop box they've done.
I think that makes sense, though, because it's all brand new stuff and... You get quite. I still think the value in there is really good.
Well, see, the only thing compared to Dark Imperium, you get a full hardback rulebook in Dark Imperium for £95.
Ah.
But, you know, they're both, all the models look really nice. Like you say, they're all brand new models. You don't have kind of customizable kits. You've got the fixed loadouts. But, you know, for the squad of, even for the Chaos side, just the squad of Space Marines, the Obliterators, the Venom Crawler, I think that's a good buy. Where it might be less value is with duplicates of the box. I think you'd probably be better waiting for the individual boxes that are going to come.
Yeah.
But if you play Chaos or Marines, I'd definitely pick this up. £105 isn't too bad. It's essentially two 50-50 start collecting boxes priced, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. You can split it with a friend who's building the other army. So
interestingly, characters are on their own frames. All the other bits are on. There's a couple of duplicated frames in there, so presumably the characters are going to be available separately down the line.
I did notice somebody mentioned actually online, I think it was last night when I was reading, that we still haven't seen the, and I don't think we will now, see the characters from Dark Imperium, including that guy, which you just played with, Jay, the guy in the Gravis
armor. They were on the same frame, weren't they?
Yeah.
So I don't think we will see them.
No. And the Ancient, so...
Primaris Ancient, yeah, you're right.
Now, whether they get a new kit, if there is a new... Primaris book, which is highly likely at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Maybe we'll get a multi-part Gravis armor and they could potentially build an Ancient instead.
Well, I'd more likely just see a single frame of a different loadout.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe give them a new weapon option in the new book, then you can use the old one if you've got it, or the, you know, different loadout on the new kit.
It's not
maybe.
Many more weapons you can give this guy. He's already got a power fist and a sword.
Yeah. So that's Shadow Spear. It is on pre-order Saturday, and everyone's super excited about seeing this.
And it's only a 1 week pre-order, which is cool.
It is, yeah.
Not
it
2
is,
weeks.
Yeah.
So, what's that mean?
It's out a week on Saturday.
Awesome. And that means what's coming in the week after, then, do we think?
We don't know. However, 80 days have passed since Harkon Worldclaimer declared that Abaddon would have the planet of Vigilus. The Black Legion have arrived. The War Master is en route to the planet. And Warhammer Community teased, well, they didn't even tease, they showed us outright the awesome new Abaddon model.
Yeah.
It looks incredible.
He looks amazing.
It looks like he's going to be a brilliant centrepiece for any collection, really.
So, the quick bits about the model first. It's got three different heads, or with different expressions. One of them's got a respirator on, which looks pretty cool.
That's my favourite so far.
That was going to be one thing I was going to mention. Which head are you? Which head are you going for?
Respirator.
I like the respirator.
I was going to go respirator as well.
Yeah.
Never mind, for variety.
The cloak is also optional. I like him with the cloak. Movement to the model.
Adds a bit of bulk to the model as well.
So what are your kind of initial thoughts on it? I haven't seen it.
Oh, I think it's a cracking model. I think it's really, really, and I think it looks really, really good next to the Ultramarines Primarch as well. They're sort of similar type.
Yeah, I mean, this has been memed a lot the last few days, but they are kind of like a shadow of each other. You've got the same little burning totem on the ground, the same kind of mirrored pose, which has led to some, you know, tennis memes and stuff.
There's been a few people who mentioned maybe we'll get a scenic base for them for the two.
I don't think we will.
No, probably not, but...
You make one.
But I might just shoot me down, just straight away like that, bang!
Just realistically, I don't think they'd sell a scenic base, a Citadel kit.
I know, you just want to dash my dreams. It's fine, don't worry about it. I think my favourite part of the model is the on-off switch on the back.
The on-off switch, yeah. Abaddon.
But in all seriousness, I mean, he is he's brilliant. He's a very nice kit and a million times better than the old metal one.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to get one just to paint up. I mean, I probably will do a Black Legion Force at some point because I'm Mr. Chaos, but it just looks a fantastic model, regardless of even using it in a game.
Yep, just on your shelf. I think they've done really well with this model. There's lots of cool details, and there's lots of different parts to look at. You've got the really cool sword. The lightning claw looks really cool. The bullets hanging off of the lightning claw are really good. Different faces. The armor plates, very, very nice. Very nice, very nicely detailed. The dead lieutenant on the base looks cool as well.
I'm gonna be controversial here and say I prefer it to the Horus model from 30K.
I think I agree. But then I think also, nowadays, I mean, Forge World used to be the benchmark for quality sculpts. Nowadays, I think these Games Workshop plastic models are better in them. I think they've surpassed Forge World now.
Well, each wave that comes out is above and beyond what we've seen before. Yeah. There hasn't been a duff release for a long time.
No.
Trying to think of the last kind of not so great sculpt. Can't really think of any off the top of my head.
Those cultists on the bikes, they're a bit rubbish, aren't they?
Yeah, so but that wasn't all the news. This kind of was the main event, but we also found out about the sequel to Vigilus Defiant, and that is Vigilus Ablaze. So, I think it's all gone a bit downhill on Vigilus. We kind of presumed that Harkin failed in his goal and then Abaddon came to finish the job. Seems like Harkin did the job and the Black Legion have come to mop up things.
Take credit.
The Imperium forces are failing. They've got a fight on their hands to stop the War Master from taking this vital planet. Because let's not forget, the Nachtman Gauntlet is the sole passageway through the Cicatrix Maledictum.
Mm-hmm.
If this falls, then essentially half of the galaxy will be completely cut off, which is not great for the forces of the Imperium and the Marine chapters on the wrong side of it.
In particular, Blood Angels.
Blood Angels are on one side, yeah. I'm really excited about this storyline. I think they need to be brave. You know, it's quite often we see with Games Workshop and rule books and lore, it's sort of status quo, nothing really changes. Yeah. They've sort of pushed the boat out a little bit with the current edition of 40K, where they've mixed things up. I think they should go much further. I'd like to see Abaddon reach Terror myself.
Yeah, I mean, we've been chatting about this the last few days. It wouldn't surprise me if the book ends with Vigilus falling, the forces of the Imperium retreating, the Blood Angels are featured.
Yeah,
I think they'll have a decision to whether they go Terror side or fall back towards, you know, Baal and their forces. It wouldn't surprise me if they ended up, if the Cicatrix Maledictum cuts them off, on the wrong side of the galaxy.
Yeah.
The Blood Angels have a history with the Black Legion. They've got some rules in their codex when they're fighting Black Legion. In some of the novels recently, especially the Abaddon novels that I've been reading, The Talon of Horus has still got some of Sanguinius's blood on it. I think there could be a good rivalry between the Blood Angels and the Black Legion going forward.
It's all very intriguing. I know you were both talking about True Heresy on our chats over lunch today about Terror completely falling and the Imperium having to fight to get it back.
Well, that'd certainly mix things up a little bit.
I'd like to see that.
Destroy the status quo, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been collecting chaos for, 2 months? And I want to see the Emperor.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit more in our next kind of segment properly. But, Vigilus Ablaze is going to have chaos specialist detachments as well. A lot of the Loyalists and the Orcs got some detachments in the original Vigilus book.
And the Eldar.
And the Genius of the Cult.
Yeah.
Pretty much every army that's had a release during this bit, so maybe we'll see stuff for releases that are happening in the coming months.
Perhaps.
So, you know, Demons, maybe, Chaos Space Marines, Demonkin, Black Legion, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was chapter-based, like Imperial Fist, Crimson Fist got stuff, didn't they?
So, yeah, they did.
So, I think it'll be a good kind of point to take your forces out of Shadow Spear and start forming them into detachments. There's one that they called out on the Warhammer community site, built around Harkon and Raptors or Havocs.
Raptors, yeah.
So, you know, you've got a good chunk there that might be able to slot into one of these detachments.
Oh, yeah.
And then finally, they kind of said that there's going to be lots of Chaos Space Marine stuff coming following that as well. So they showed off a new Havoc with an awesome
rotor cannon.
So it calls back to kind of 30k weaponry there, which makes sense because these guys have been hanging around for 10,000 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we'll see loads of stuff for the Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah, I think we'll see a few more demon engines, like you say, Dave. There was on the Warhammer community, they were talking about different kinds of demon
They were teasing about that today, actually, yeah. They were name-dropping some units we've not seen before. So yeah, I think we will see a lot more demon engines.
Yeah, well, I think the storyline of Shadow Spear is about I can't remember what the exact word is, but it's like a demon forge, isn't it? Where they're building the demon engines.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea is the Shadow Spear Force, like the Vanguard, have gone to this planet away from Vigilus in the same, like, close by. And as they've got there, because they've not been able to make contact with this planet, they've got there and found that the Black Legion have just completely overtaken it and there's all these forges and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
to fuel the war on Vigilus, presumably.
Indeed.
So, yeah, so that is... We don't know when this is all out. It might be the week following Shadow Spear. We don't know. It could be Abaddon and Vigilus ablaze in the same week, like we saw Khalgar with the original book.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
We know that the Blades of Khorne book is in the mix somewhere as well. They've managed to do a stonking job of keeping... the breaking news outside of rumour sites, haven't they, for this?
They have.
I mean, one thing's for sure, we're going to see all this in the next 3 months.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think we'll see Abaddon and Vigilus ablaze straight after Shadow Spear.
Do you not think?
No, I don't think so, no. I think, like you say, I think we'll see Blades of Khorne...
as a filler week.
...put in between. I think to go Shadow Spear and then, boom, straight into the next Vigilus book. Nah... I think they'll space it out.
The only thing that makes me think otherwise is when are their annual financials due? Is it April? So they tend to have a big release just before their year-end accounts turn. Mm. Yeah, lots of money in the
can't comfort. Get bigger than the Warmaster.
That's that what makes me think this will be out before April.
It'll be between now and there'll be a couple of weeks. Maybe you're right actually, because I think there'll be a couple of weeks between the new Vigilus book coming out and Warhammer Fest.
Yeah,
because I think Warhammer Fest now we're going to see Primaris Codex, and Demonkin or Chaos,
Black Legion, whatever it is,
yeah.
And the Age of Sigmar boxed game expansion, whatever it is that they've teased.
Yeah, completely forgot about that.
So yeah, lots
too
of
much
stuff.
Stuff.
Way.
Is that Warcry? Is that...
No, that's a separate game.
Oh, that's right. That's a skirmish.
There's another boxes, of course.
Yeah, yeah, an expansion. What was the name of it?
I can't think.
Forbidden Chambers.
That's the
Underworld one. Oh, well, yeah. The big box that's come in for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah. It's like Soul Wars 2.0.
Oh, is this with the demon hunting Stormcast?
That's Warcry that was mentioned specifically in there, yeah.
Oh, well, okay. We'll.
This is what Games Workshop get for releasing so much stuff. Like, you just start getting confused over what is coming. My goodness. Right, so, yeah, everything's very chaotic. We've got loads of chaos on the way.
Yes.
What else have we got, Matt?
So that's kind of all the breaking news this week. We've had a few teasers about Warhammer Age of Sigmar roleplay.
Yep.
A few little bits about the different characters that are in there. The Griffhounds, sadly, are not playable characters, but they are companions that can come with you. We also found out some more about the new Warhammer Fantasy roleplay expansion book, Hard Nights and Long Days, something like that, and that is going to have gnomes as a playable race.
Gnomes from the old world.
From the it's set in the old world. Warhammer roleplay.
Can't even remember being gnomes.
There's not. So they went out to Games Workshop and they've come back with concept art and storylines about gnomes in the Warhammer world.
What?
That was
gnome armies. I hope they survived the end times.
Age of Sigmar breaking news right there.
Well, it's not Age of Sigmar, it's Warhammer Fantasy.
No, what I mean is, you know, we could see gnomes coming to Age of Sigmar.
I don't think I don't know. The end of the world was quite horrific.
Look at the amount of stuff that survived the end of the world, Matt. There's gnomes can bury away somewhere.
And stuff.
Battletoad gnomes confirmed.
We've been right about a lot of stuff on this podcast.
That's a bit of out there one, though. But well, yes, that's all the news. So, you know, very Abaddon and Black Legion heavy, but yeah, I think it's going to be a good few weeks when we start seeing
there
stuff.
There is one other little bit of news which you put on the website yesterday, for those interested, is on Humble Bundle. You can pick up a bunch of awesome Horus Heresy novels. ebooks and audiobooks.
Yes, you can, and it's I think the top tier is about £12 ish, and it gets the initial 10 or so books in the series plus some audiobooks.
The first 10 are very good as well.
Yeah,
there's quite a few Primark books in there as
Yes, there's about four or five Magnus, of them. Fulgrim's in there.
Gulliman's in there.
Yeah.
So I haven't picked it up yet, but I'm very tempted.
Yeah, I'll be. And there's also two packs of comics, desktop wallpapers as well.
Alright. Awesome. I thought it was some comic books or
something. No, I don't think not in that one, now, I think.
Unfortunately.
But yeah, so that's really cool. So check that out. As ever with Humble Bundle, you can choose where your money goes as well. So if you want to put it all to charity, you can, which is a nice touch.
If you listen to this podcast like 2 weeks after we recorded it, you've probably missed your chance, unfortunately. But if you listen to it, you know, pretty much soon after release.
Yeah, I think it's 2 weeks as of yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, 2 weeks as of yesterday, you've got to get this. So,
cool.
So yeah, by the time you hear this, I'd double check the site because there might be only days left.
Our apologies if you've missed it for teasing you. But never mind. Is that all the news? Have we run out of news?
I think that's all the news.
I feel like we've missed something. But you never know a Games Workshop nowadays. I'm sure we'll cover it next week. So yeah, that is the end of the news. So we shall crack on with the rest of the podcast. So Shadowspear is on the horizon. And the Vigilus campaign, or the Vigilus storyline, is moving swiftly on. So we thought we'd take a moment to have a chat about the state of affairs on Vigilus at the moment and what it could mean for the future of 40K.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm really excited that this is uncharted territory that we're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, Vigilus, we saw the big source book that came out just before Christmas.
Yeah.
As well as the kind of gaming content, it had lots of new lore. Basically, collecting all the story threads that we'd seen over the last few battle boxes.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a new thing from Games Workshop. We've seen more of those than we have done in the past. And each one of them seems to have a thread of a storyline, which then all comes together in a campaign book.
Yeah.
What are your kind of thoughts on the way they're doing those?
I like it. I've not bought many of the actual battle boxes. Do they come with any like narrative campaigns inside the box?
Yeah, they do, yeah. And some kind of storyline. It's all of these have been feeding into this Vigilus campaign. So if you played through the boxes that they've been coming out, essentially played through kind of the Vigilus storyline so far.
I think that's a neat idea.
I think it's a really good idea.
And I think actually the force that comes in the boxes, it's not too much of like a painting project. You can probably get that painted up pretty quickly between two of you and play through some games ready for the next battle box to come out.
And a lot of them, you know, we've had, you know, Dark Imperium way back at the start. We had the Wake the Dead, was it, with the Eldar and
Marines? With the Eldar, yeah.
Forge something.
Forge Bane, yeah. Speed Freaks is technically in the same storyline because it's the Orcs.
Tooth and Claw, yeah.
And between them, that's a lot of armies covered.
Yeah.
And if you've got Marine, if you've been collecting these, and you've got quite a sizable Marine force right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is it. If you bought mainly Wake the Dead plus this, and still have the stuff from Dark Imperium, how many points is that? That's a fair chunk of an army that you've got to put together.
Definitely. I mean, Tooth and Claw, you got like a Dreadnought and all sorts. Reavers. Yeah.
There's no excuse for anyone not to own a Primaris army, really.
No, there isn't. But no, I've always liked boxed games, and in the past, less so recently, because there was the Yaldar versus Death Watch box. There was the Gene Stealer Cult versus Death Watch box in the previous edition.
Yes, there was, yeah.
But you know, prior to that, really, it was just new editions of the game where you get your big box with two armies.
Ooh, you've raised a very good point there. I think that might be where these battle boxes started. Deathmask,
yeah,
the Harlequins in Eldrad against Death Watch, because obviously that told the story of Eldrad basically.
And this really is the kind of intro to this, you know, Dark Imperium storyline,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, because that was the Gathering Storm, wasn't it? That was when we first saw the Yeneed army.
Yeah. So I think it's around about that time where obviously they were setting the seeds for this way of doing things. And I think it's really good. It's, you know, every couple of months now. We joked previously on the podcast that it seemed every 2 weeks there was a new battle box coming out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really good. It's different contents to your start collecting box as well. You know, if you think half of the boxes are approximately £50, that's not a massive amount to pay for a load of new toys.
No, it's not.
I think Games Workshop have realised this. That's probably the, and it's not really pocket money price, but that's a fairly painless price to get some toys, you know, comparable to a video game, for example.
Yes, yeah, well, you'd pay £50, £55 for a game. But with Warhammer, you can paint it and you can battle with them. So I think, I mean, we talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago, didn't we? About the hobby. I think it was quite a few weeks ago. But yeah, I really like how the story's progressing with Vigilus. I mean, we obviously sort of half-jokingly talk about Terra falling and things like that.
I'm not half-joking. I'm serious about that.
Well, you know what? I think that we will see a Siege of Terra. I think we'll see all the stuff happening across the galaxy. I think we'll see a battle box fall. Now, they might have this years planned out, but there's lots of stuff they can do. There's lots of plot threads hanging about various things.
I don't think we'll see... I think we will see a Siege of Terra eventually.
Yeah, or not anytime
but
soon.
But I think we'll see a lot more plastic Primarchs before then.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the old, really, like, mainstream characters, such as Dante, we discussed earlier about Dante possibly getting involved with Vigilus, with the Blood Angels.
Yeah, we know that the Blood Angels are interesting because they were under assault from the Tyranids, and then Khorne did them a favour and wiped out all the Tyranids on the planet. Now, Khorne's probably got unfinished business with the Blood Angels. A Khorne versus Blood Angels battle box would be cool, with, you know, a new Dante in there, maybe.
New Dante, yep.
Well, I mean, all these, like, key chapter masters, as they are... such as Dante, such as Azrael.
Yeah.
They've all got really old minis now. And I think with Marnus coming back in a big way, I mean, maybe he's slightly different because we did get a fine cast Marnus, didn't we?
No, he's a metal Marnus in Terminator.
Oh, no, he was metal and he just got redone in the fine cast, didn't he?
But the Marnus sculpt, there's been a couple of Marnus sculpts over the years. He's the more recent one. The older metal sculpt of Marnus is a lot newer than Azrael and Dante.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're really old. They are now. They're like second edition.
Oh, yeah, and they're small as well.
Yeah, and I think, and that's, it's, you can essentially have a battle box with just two new models in, a HQ for each side, and then recycle some of the sprues. That's where the kind of better value ones, because they're older kits.
Yeah.
You know, we've got plot threads about Armageddon. You know, what if we saw, I don't know, World Eaters and Armageddon Steel Legion plastic kits?
Yeah, they need new guard models. That'd be nice.
The Sisters of Battle, they could well introduce them with a plastic box similar to this and then follow it with the individual boxes. There's lots of scope for stuff in these.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they introduce, when the new Sisters of Battle stuff comes out, how you'll be able to get started with them. I think it'll be revolved around a big plot.
The Sisters of Battle will be at the vanguard of the crusade to reclaim Terra. Calling it now.
That'd be cool. And I hope we see this kind of thing for Age of Sigmar as well.
Yeah.
So checking my notes from previous shows, Forbidden Powers, the expansion for Age of Sigmar, could that be a battle box for there? In a similar way to Shadowspear, where it's all new models, all push fit?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have heard rumours about it being a new Stormcast Chamber.
Yeah.
The Forbidden Powers, like, gladiatorial.
Well, that rumour was more on the Warcry side of things, though. But presumably you'd have the same chamber. Got there eventually.
Do you remember the funny video about them opening chambers?
Yeah, it was a brilliant video.
Oh, yeah. Another chamber.
So, yeah, and having these mixed in with kind of campaign books as well.
Yeah.
You know, that collects together all the lore for people who've maybe missed the individual boxes. I mean, there's lots more content in that book anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's filling in the gaps between the different boxes.
Yeah.
Plus having all the rule stuff for your gamers. I think Games Workshop are on top form at the minute. I can't fault them at the minute.
No, neither can I. Spending our money, that's what they're doing.
They are indeed. So, obviously we'll be kind of looking into Shadowspear in a couple of weeks when we've got it in our hands as well.
Yeah.
I'll be looking through all the images and artwork to see if we can see any sneaky previews of future models.
Well, interesting you say that. On Vigilus Ablaze, there seems to be a few new characters on the front of the book.
Somebody mentioned a new Marine with a different halo and different armour.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've missed these in the past.
There's a sorcerer with a book which looks very much like the Demon Engine one that we had a few last week, I think.
And we saw the sorcerer's backpack
Yeah.
That was weeks ago now, wasn't it? It was one of the first.
So it looks like Abaddon and two new characters. One of them might be the Master of Possessions, but there's at least one new character there that we haven't seen before. I couldn't see any new demon engines and stuff. It was quite a small image on the website.
I saw another Terminator with a close combat weapon.
So I think a close combat Terminator unit's a safe bet.
Like a honor guard for Abaddon.
Yeah. The question mark for me is whether we get new ranged Terminators.
Yeah. I mean, I had a look, like when you pointed out the other day, and I had a look on the online store, and actually, they're quite nice models, the existing
Terminators. They're fairly recent. I think the most recent Chaos kits, because they came out around about the same time as, I can't remember the box, the one with Dark Angels and Chaos Space Marines, and they had the new Chosen.
Vengeance, Dark Vengeance.
Yeah, so yeah. I think they're from that era, which isn't, I know it's a few editions ago, but they still stand Passable, up yeah. compared to the old Black Legionnaires that are Yonks old now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I also think, I wonder whether we'll see any development with Call Belisarius Call. Is it Call?
Yeah, Belisarius Call. Now
he's loyal, isn't he? But there's a bit of tension between him and Gulliman.
He is, and he seems to like using unorthodox sources for his gene seed as well.
Yeah.
Well, his name's reappeared in the lore now, hasn't it? Because he's been working on the new Vanguard, the weapons and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So his name's back in the mix.
Yeah.
But what's he been doing?
Yeah, I'd still love to see a new Martian Civil War storyline. You know, imagine what kits they could do with Dark Mechanicum.
But if Terra falls, Mars is right next door. I'm certain Terra's going to fall.
Dark Mechanicum in the last sort of 12 months we've got stuff with that keyword now as well, haven't we? And it's really starting to show and it's making more of a stand in Horus Heresy as well. I mean, I don't really follow the Horus Heresy line as much as you two do, but they seem to be getting a lot of time at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, keywords are one thing to keep an eye on, because that generally means that there's going to be an army behind it. Not always, but you know, it's a good bet.
Mm. Potentially. It's all very exciting. Do we have anything else to add about Vigilus and the continuing storyline? Aside from everything's looking awesome for 40k?
This is part two of Vigilus. There's no more Vigilus.
Well, we don't know. It's part two of Vigilus. We don't know if it's part two of two, or there might be more chapters.
So there could be a part three of Vigilus.
Could be part three. Or, you know, there's these two, and then it goes off into a different campaign. Yeah. We don't know.
I think the focus is always going to be on the Imperium versus Chaos, though, because I think they made that a strong point when
they did,
released
the
edition. So we might see some Xenos factions come in, but I think the focus is going to be on Abaddon.
Well, we saw that with the Gene Stealer Cult. It was Gene Stealer Cult through the lens of this greater Chaos versus Imperium battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason the Gene Stealer cultists rose on Vigilus is... Oh, no, it was the Orcs, wasn't it? It's the reason they really
The Orcs dropped... Came up. The Orcs managed to breach the shields and it all kicked off, and the cultists had to uprise early to take advantage of it, but then Space Marines came in and killed the population, so it's all good.
I also think we might see some, and I know you guys keep saying this isn't going to happen, but I remember that rule book with that artwork that looked like a battle outside the Eternity Gates on Terra with Primaris Marines and what looked to me, I sound like someone off Ancient Aliens, the Great Angel fighting in the background. It was a Space Marine Primarch type character with angel wings.
Do you think the next Imperium Primarch is Sanguinius?
I think the next Imperium Primarch will be Sanguinius.
What do you think, Matt?
The next Imperium?
Yeah, the next plastic Imperium Primarch. Who do you think it's going to be?
Lehman Ross.
So, well, there was a good novel about Lehman Ross and Valdor, which was a 40k short story, but it proper tied into what's going on now, and it hinted at they've been gone on a quest, they're coming back with some spears, Valdor and Ross. So I could see Ross coming back. But Sanguinius, and I'm reading Titan Death at the moment, and Sanguinius plays a big part in that, and I've missed a book because apparently something happened on Davin, and I've not read that bit. I need to go back and find out what happened to Sanguinius on Davin. But it seems to me, from reading the Horus Heresy novels, that it was always the Emperor's plan to have Sanguinius rule as Lord of the Imperium. It's like the Emperor's heir, almost.
Ooh, well, that'd cause some confrontation with Gulliman, surely.
It would, of course.
The Regent of the Imperium.
Yeah.
But did he really want that title?
I don't think Gulliman was too impressed with the state of affairs when he came back.
No.
He wasn't too impressed with because he had a conversation with the Emperor. We don't know what was said to him or what was passed in psychic waves to him, but he wasn't very happy with that either. Obviously, the Emperor had a grand plan, and the Primarchs were just a tool on his belt to accomplish that plan. The Primarchs were quite egotistical type, you know, vain type characters with their own desires, their own ambitions and things like that. And I think Gulliman was always a level-headed one, though.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he realised what his place would be or what his purpose was.
I personally wouldn't rule out the return of Sanguinius. I think that would be a big monumental event.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
When we see that, who knows? You know, the rate Games Workshop are putting out stuff at the minute, we could have a Sanguinius campaign in the last half of the year and we wouldn't even know it yet.
No. I think the only thing that sort of... I think it's quite a controversial subject, that, because I think a lot of Blood Angels fans quite like the sacrifice part of Sanguinius' history and the fact that, I mean, we're going to find out what happens at the Siege of Terror. This is all being written.
And this is it. Now, I think I asked on the Warhammer Live stream a while ago whether they factor in the current storyline events into the Horus Heresy series, and they absolutely do.
Yeah.
So, what happens during the siege, what happens during Sanguinius' sacrifice slash whatever actually happens, will definitely have repercussions on the current storyline.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
It is, yeah.
That's really cool. Excellent. Right, I think we'll wrap this segment up at this stage, but we aren't quite finished yet because we have our top three coming up next. To celebrate, I suppose could be the right word, the return of Abaddon, depending on if you're a, you know, Chaos.
Or newly YouTube. Converted Chaos.
Yeah. We thought our top three for this week would be our top three villains. Now, these can be from any of the Games Workshop systems.
Yeah, universes.
40K, Fantasy.
I had Heath Ledger's Joker.
Honourable mention.
Yeah.
So yes, quite an interesting one this week. Before we get to the community's picks, let's run through our top three. So Matt, do you want to start us off with your third choice?
Well, I have started with the big bad out of Age of Sigmar. I think he's been sidelined a little bit by some skeleton fella. But what about Archaon, the Lord of the End Times?
Hmm?
The chap who brought about the end of the old world. Now, I say he's a villain. He doesn't really get on with the Chaos Gods that much either. He just kind of hates everybody, really.
He's just like a moody adolescent.
He is, yeah.
Got family problems, hasn't he?
With a demon sword.
With a demon sword. He might be backed by the Chaos Gods, but he certainly doesn't agree with them. He begrudgingly destroyed the old world in a bid to try and get rid of them. Because, you know, obviously they're fueled by emotion. Wipe out a world that hurts the gods. So they were a bit miffed with him when he survived through to the mortal realms.
Yeah.
They threw demons at him. His horse killed them and turned into a horrific beast of gribbliness. And then, yeah, he, you know, took over most of the mortal realms.
Yeah.
I think they're missing a trick with this guy. I think they need to properly big him up a bit in Age of Sigmar.
Well, you see, since in the Realm War series, he's obviously been driven back, and I think he's currently residing in the Varan Spire, which coincidentally seems to be the setting of Warcry. So, you know, we know there's probably going to be a Dark Oath slash Slaves to Darkness slash, you know, Varangard book coming at some point, Ever Chosen, all the Chaos lumped together. Archaon's got to be doing something cool when that happens.
Yeah, it's a good storyline to bring him back. Bring him back as one of the main adversaries.
Because Nagash, let's face it, is the big bad from Soul Wars now, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he is. Yeah, yeah. I think he deserves a good. And I mean, his model is amazing.
Also, he needs a keeper of secrets to eat to make Draugr even bigger.
He needs to find one.
He does. Yeah.
Funnily enough, my third choice is Nagash. So I think, from way back in Fantasy, he's played a pivotal part. I mean, when he's reawoken during the End Times, you know, one of the first things he does is just annihilate the Tomb Kings.
Yeah.
Just there you go. You're gone. That laters, you know, that's you destroyed.
Laters.
You know, Cetra. He was literally just turned to dust, wasn't he? He was.
No, Cetra survived, didn't he?
Cetra was, at the end of the first book, Nagash, Cetra is saved by an unknown force and given another chance. Now, whether he's now a herald of the Chaos Gods or some other force has brought him back, he's still around somewhere.
So yeah, I think Nagash was awesome in fantasy, and I think he's really come into his own in the Mortal Realms. Like you say, he's now really the main bad guy of Age of Sigmar.
He's not really a bad guy, though, is he?
Well, I suppose he was in the pantheon of gods with Sigmar.
He was. Yeah. I think in Old World, Nagash was definitely a baddie.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to destroy the world, rule the world. But in Age of Sigmar, yeah, he was. He was an ally of Sigmar against the forces of Chaos.
You could argue, was he doing it for his own ends?
Maybe he was, but I think he's just looking after himself and his realms.
And let's not forget, Sigmar's not exactly clean-cut himself. He is forcing souls against their will into bodies.
And I'm sure he agreed with Nagash that the souls would be Nagash, and he's gone back on that agreement.
He's cheated him. And that's the whole Soul Wars thing, is because Sigmar's cheating him out of souls.
I think to your average man or woman on the street, Nagash is a baddie. But it's not as black and white as that.
There you go.
But he is a villain, but it depends on your perspective.
This is it, yeah.
I suppose you could say that about everything. But
yeah. Well, that's what makes... No, fair enough.
Sanguinius definitely isn't a villain.
That makes it an interesting, though, where there's not clear black and white. Yeah, more interesting characters, aren't they?
No.
Have you read the Nagash books? I can't remember who did. I think it was Josh Reynolds, I want to say. The kind of... The prequel series set in Old Khemri, talking about the various priests and Nagash's ascension to godhood, essentially.
I think I started reading it, but I don't think I finished it.
Okay, no, they're definitely worth a read if you want to
come back. I've got that at home somewhere, actually, yeah. I'll have to read it that. But no, I think, and he's also an amazing model, and I've got a big Legion of Nagash army, so.
There you go.
Nagash, your third choice, Jay.
My third choice is going back to the Old World, and this guy, he didn't make it to Age of Sigmar, I don't know why. It's a shame, really. So, some point in the history of the Old World, the biggest, meanest Black Orc stumbled out of the Badlands. With, I think it was a Badlands, some Chaos Dwarf area, with his Black Orc, Dart Immortals, Grimgor Ironhide.
Grimgor, oh, yes!
Cool. My brother had the model, painted the model up, and it was one of my favourite models my brother painted up for Fantasy. He's holding like a Bretonian head in his hand.
I was going to say, he's holding a head up in some shape.
Really
or form,
cool.
Isn't he?
Over the years, he's fought against the dwarfs, and in fact, the dwarfs couldn't beat him and ran away from him in the end and hid themselves in their carracks or whatever they're called. He fought the humans at Kislev, then he got bored fighting them. He started fighting night goblins, and I think I think if you're writing a biography about Grimgor, this was probably his most content part of his life, when he was fighting the Skaven and the night goblins in some old dwarf holes.
Had a whale of a time.
He was loving that, and he was there for a long time. And then I think he did some wires into the Empire. And then he had quite a big part to play in the End Times.
Yeah, because I think he ends up fighting Nagash, doesn't he?
I can't remember whoever he fought Nagash. He fought Krom, who was a Chaos Warlord, and he beat Krom. And then when Archon was fighting the humans at the end, I think he fought some paladin or Luthor or Rus.
Maybe. It's been a while since I've read it.
And then Grimgor headbutted him. And declared, like, I'm the best. Grimgor's the best.
And the world ended.
Well, no, it wasn't in the End Times. This was in the Storm of Chaos before. And he ended up fighting Archaon, headbutted him to the ground, could have killed him, but decided not to because he enjoyed the fight and walked off declaring the Greenskins and Grimgor's the best. And then in the End Times, there was sort of like a rematch of that. But I think Archaon killed him at the end of... He became the Incarnate Beast and an Archaon killed him.
What Jay's trying to say is Grimgor had the chance to save Warhammer Fantasy.
He could have saved the old world,
He could have saved the old world.
and he didn't.
No. But I think even though he died, I think he still won. I think that's the old way.
Yeah. And, you know, his essence is probably still out there in the Realm of Beasts.
Yeah, maybe we'll see him come back. I think Gordrak is the new Herald of Mork or Gork or someone.
You know, maybe Gork and Mork are still essentially his soul.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Grimgor Ironhide.
Ace. On to your second choice, Matt.
Okay, well, my second choice is the true bad guy in the Horus Heresy. It's not Horus. Far from it. It's Erebus.
The word bearer.
This guy, basically, everything that transpires in the Horus Heresy is due to Erebus. He introduces Lorgar to the Chaos Gods, whispering in his ear and slowly turning the tide of things. He is the person who convinces Horus, against Magnus's advice, to to turn against the Emperor. He feeds him these false visions of what the universe is going to be like.
He doesn't he give the blade to someone that that's the one that puts Horus down later?
What's it called? Anathema. Everything that transpires is due to Erebus. He's not a very nice man.
And he's still kicking around.
Is
he?
Yep.
He is the first...
Apostle, yeah.
He's essentially, he's the first conduit to the gods.
Yep.
He tells Lorgoth there's other gods in the universe. The word bearers, they worship the Emperor as a god against the Emperor's wishes. Stung by that, he went looking for other deities that might appreciate his worship, and unfortunately for the people of the universe, those other gods were listening and gladly took him in as their apprentice, I suppose.
My gosh. See, this is where I wish I'd read more Horus Heresy, because I don't really know much about him.
I believe he also advised Horus in the Istvan campaign. It was really his idea to essentially wipe out the loyalist elements of the Legion and then trick the surviving loyalists into the Dropsite Massacre. Feeding it into Horus and using Horus as the kind of mouthpiece, but it's really Erebus kind of whispering. He's very much the worm tongue of the Horus Heresy series.
Does he have all cool tattoos on his skin?
Yeah, he's fully tattooed. He's got the text from the Book of Lorgar, hasn't he, tattooed to his skin?
And actually, it's quite funny because the first book that Lorgar wrote, the something Divinicus or whatever, that's actually...
The Legio Divinicus.
Legio Divinicus. That's actually the Ecclesiarchy's Bible, isn't it, in the 40K? So, if people dug a bit deeper, hang on a second, this is a book written by a demon Primarch, a traitor Primarch, and we're sort of the cult of the Emperor, basically.
Of course, if you asked me if I was involved in anything, I'd just reply, cannot say.
No comment.
No comment.
Excellent. So what's your number two then, Dan?
My second choice is, I mean... Lots of Chaos villains have tried to, you know, overthrow Terror and kill the Emperor and stuff. But in more recent times, and he's been in the lore for quite a long time, but he's the only Chaos character, although you could argue it's Chaos or not, who's actually stepped foot on Terror recently and got as far as the palace.
Yes.
And that is Cypher. See, I think he's a really cool character. I don't think his rules do him justice in 8th edition, if I'm being honest. Is he a villain? Really? He probably is. But, he made it all the way to the Emperor's Palace, and he befriended Gulliman, really.
He was in the Triumvirate of the Imperium box set.
Yeah.
He was.
Was he a spy?
I suppose the question is Cypher his name, or is it a title? And there's multiple Cyphers over the years.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I've mainly read about Cypher in the Dark Angels codexes over the years. And he just appears, doesn't he? All over the galaxy, randomly. So, you know, maybe he is the James Bond of 40K, where he's actually different. He's not just one person.
Yeah.
He is multiple people, like you say, a title.
The Dark Angel Heresy books, I think Gav Thorpe did some of them, kind of hints that this might be a title that's passed between individuals. Because it's very cloak and daggers, isn't it, the Dark Angels? There's lots of ritual and stuff that we don't even know about.
No.
So, you know, is there always a Cypher who acts as a impartial force to decide the fate of the Legion? We don't know.
But how would you explain him having the sword on his back?
Well, this is it. Is he a traitor? Potentially, is the Lion a traitor? There's lots of question marks about the Dark Angels.
There is lots of question marks about the Dark Angels. And I'm sure some people listening to this podcast thinking Cypher's a good guy. He's definitely not a villain.
He had a cool model with his two plasma pistols, the first metal model.
Yeah.
And then his new model's good as well.
I think his new model's really good.
It's better proportion. It's quite a big chunky.
It's just, like I say, it's in... Because I was tempted to take him... When I was going Death Guard, which I'll be going back to this year, I wanted to have a detachment led by Cypher, but... His rules really aren't that amazing, unfortunately.
Real cool.
But, yeah, he's a very cool model. So I'll have to get him painted one day. But, yeah, that was my second choice. What's your second choice,
Jeff? Very interesting, guys, Dave. Very interesting second choice you got there. My second choice, you know, 10,000 years ago, Terror is under siege, the Blood Angels, the White Scars, The Imperial Fists, loyal legions to the Emperor, are there on the palace walls defending. Some people start to question, where is Lionel Johnson? Why is he not at Terror? My second choice is Lionel Johnson, the traitor prime.
Oh, wow, there's some controversy.
And there's a lot of evidence for this. So,
you've actually got a list of evidence here.
You know, his own planet, Caliban, the loyalist Dark Angels, garrisoning Caliban. Lionel Johnson goes back and kills them all. Blows up his home planet. I mean, that's quite alarming to begin with. And then he disappears for the Siege of Terror. He's not there. Is that on purpose? Maybe it was. Then he goes to sleep for 10,000 years. The Imperium's going to, you know, it's got Gene Steel's attacking it. It's got Abaddon leading Black Crusade. Necron's coming back. Where is Lionel Johnson? He's asleep in the rock. Convenient. And then also, you get the Imperium forces fighting in war zones against the enemies of the Imperium. And who's on the other side? Dark Angels calling themselves fallen, but we all know the Dark Angels. If that isn't the sign that he is a villain, then I don't know what is.
In that same said Dark Angels series, there's a point where Johnson hands over some weapons of mass destruction to some known traitors. Now, you could argue that the line didn't know that they'd sided for Horus, but that's what a traitor would say, surely.
Exactly.
I suppose you could argue, and I don't want to believe it because I think he's still a loyalist Primarch, but you could argue as well that maybe he's sleeping because the Dark Angels are keeping him asleep. They're like loyal and they know what he did.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And, you know, that's why they're not letting him wake up.
I just think, you know, he was the first Primarch. He could have tipped the balance in the Imperium's favour. He hasn't. He could have redeemed himself in the 10,000 years before. He hasn't. You've got his children running around fighting against the Imperium.
I think there's something in his background that was stopping him from being part of all these events. I think he's just misunderstood.
I think he's going to be the next traitor Primarch.
Yeah. Well, the Inquisition are currently en route, and to be fair, it's not going to get much better, because my number one choice, villain of the Warhammer 40,000 universe, is the Emperor of Mankind.
I can't believe this.
I'm surrounded by chaos.
How can the Emperor be a villain?
The Emperor, who in his desire for power, his desire to rule the galaxy, the desire to rule the universe, made a pact with entities beyond his comprehension. He made a deal with the Dark Gods in order to create the genetic material that led to the Primarchs. He then turned against them. He didn't hold up his side of the bargain. We still don't know now exactly what happened, but the gods weren't happy. As they wouldn't be. They'd been promised something by this upstart character from Terror, who he's not mortal. He's not a human. What is he?
This is blasphemous.
So the Chaos Gods, as is right, scattered these falsely gotten Primarchs across the galaxy, and then started their campaign to end his lies.
The only thing I'll say for the Emperor is he wasn't a very good dad.
Well, he wasn't a dad. He didn't see himself as a dad.
No, he didn't. But he was, wasn't he?
Well, he still wasn't a very good dad, was he?
No, he wasn't.
he sees his children as disposable tools, like Jay said earlier.
Yeah, I mean, there was before the Primarchs, there was the Thunder Warriors, disposable. Even the Primarchs themselves, maybe some of them were disposable.
Now, I'll just describe a scenario. And does this seem like the actions of a proud, someone to worship, an upstanding person? The word bearers, we mentioned them a few times in this podcast, and that maybe it's whisperings from Erebus that have somehow infiltrated Spruce and Bruce HQ.
I noticed he has got a few new tattoos on his face.
Next week's podcast will just be me.
And, you know, they in their their campaigns across the galaxy, they converted planets to the Emperor. They may have gone about it a slightly different way and made them sites of worship with statues and praises to the God Emperor of Mankind. The Emperor sends the Ultramarines, led by Gulliman and Malkador the Sigilite, to a planet, and for the crime of worshipping the Emperor, they essentially nuke the capital city, blinding the entire population of the planet. for their crimes in worshipping the Emperor. Does that seem like something a good person would do?
You've got to put it into context. It's all about context.
It's funny because I've just started reading, after you two have badgered me to death over, I've started reading Master of Mankind, and I'm only a couple of chapters in so far, but already I'm getting these seeds of what you two have been telling me about. Actually, he's not a very nice guy. And that's by, I think it's in chapter one or chapter two, when a custodian is brought into his vision. And he's like a kid.
Yeah.
And that's when he first realises that mankind should be ruled because it can't look after itself.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. It's in like the first chapter of the book. So it's not like the end or anything. So yeah, I can see he's not the nicest fella.
He's not the villain.
Yes. My top choice to finish off. No, we're not. We've not done yours yet, have we?
I'm just going to do the Lionel Johnson again.
I'm going to go back to a bit more sensible now. He may have already been mentioned this top three, but I'm not going to change it. Because how many characters can be blamed for ending a game system?
Yeah.
Not many.
That's quite a title.
You know, if it wasn't for him, then we would still have Warhammer Fantasy, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and for some of those Warhammer Fantasy fans, he's the ultimate villain.
Because he destroyed a gaming system. You know, gone are flank charges and
rank bonuses.
And that's Archaon. There's not much more I can say because you covered it already, Matt, but I didn't want to change it because I wanted to say my piece about him ending the game system.
He's going to stay.
Matt just ruined it. But it couldn't be my third choice. He was definitely my top choice. So we'll move swiftly on to your top choice, Jay.
So my top choice is the goddess Slaanesh.
Ooh. She who first.
So Eldar have always been my favourite 40k faction. I've always loved the Eldar. And I love the whole, I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, the whole sort of the fall story and all the mythology that Slaanesh being birthed, wiping out the Eldar race, fighting the Eldar gods. I just think that is such a really cool piece of 40k background. I've always really hated Slaanesh. Obviously, the Solitaire, one of my favourite 40k units and in the whole universe, and the relationship that has with Slaanesh, I think is really, really, really interesting. And also on the Age of Sigmar side, I think the lore and the developments around Slaanesh is also really interesting.
Yeah.
What we're seeing with the elves, with Slaanesh being imprisoned, with Slaanesh missing from a lot of the goings on so far, I think we're going to see some really exciting stuff for Slaanesh in the future. I think Slaanesh is going to be a very cool villain in future edition, well, future campaigns.
And I don't think that's very far off, really. No. I mean, Wrath from Raptors.
I think we'll see it this year.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, even just the glimpses of artwork where you can just see the silhouette of something that might be Slaanesh in the background of this, like all these prisoned crystal chamber.
Well, friend of the show, Craig from the Purple Sparkly Unicorns, points out in that artwork of Slaanesh imprisoned with the big kind of spires that are like some kind of magical, cell around it. You can see tiny little elven figures walking on the gantries. So, along with Slaanesh, we could see some proper elves back in the universe as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very exciting. Yeah, and Slaanesh, there's always been a cool relationship between Slaanesh and the Eldar and Slaanesh and the elves, because you've got like Malkeith and Morathi from the old world were such a cool... I mean, Morathi was almost like an Erebus-type character, really. And then going into Age of Sigmar, Malarion, Tirion, Teclis, Morathi's back, all sort of linked to Slaanesh. So I think we might see Nagash on a downward sort of thing and Slaanesh rising to replace him.
You know what I'd like to see? I kind of guess we'll probably see, because we've not seen a model for it, her, him, who knows. Nakari, the named demon.
Yeah.
He's featured in both systems, I believe.
Yeah, cause was that one on Sigma's Prime fighting Sanguinius? There was a Khorne and it could have been the Slaanesh Grey demon.
I mean, time and space is meaningless to a demon, but yeah. I think Nakari's been around a bit and has been, poking things here and there.
How is Sanguinius always somehow involved in these?
Just saying.
Somehow Sanguinius is always mentioned. Excellent. Well, that wraps up our top threes, but we've got quite a few community ones to read out, which we'll come back to in just a moment. Right, before we wrap up episode 29 of this podcast, Matt, you've got your data slab at the ready for our community picks, because you've got quite a few of them there.
We have, so we'll rattle through these with kind of shout-outs to the ones that, you know, we haven't mentioned so far. So we'll start with Heretic Deb, who said Erebus, Ahriman. Ahriman's a good character. And Abaddon. I mean, we didn't cover Abaddon because, you know, he was the obvious choice, wasn't he?
Ahriman, yeah, he's a really cool villain.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been responsible for quite a few things, hasn't he? The, what was it called? The Rubric...
The Rubicon.
Rubicon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martin says Abaddon. He has convinced everyone he's a big bad, but all he wants to do is cuddle Teal. Erebus, because, yeah... he's not a very nice man. And Nagash, because he's Nagash.
Yeah.
The new painter says Ian Watson, Lionel Johnson, and Magnus.
Who's Magnus? Ian Watson?
Magnus did nothing wrong.
Magnus did nothing wrong. He shouldn't be involved in any of these top three.
Magnus is misunderstood.
You've seen the beginning bit of Master of Mankind now.
Yeah, Magnus, yeah.
Poor Magnus. You feel so sorry for him.
Wrecked it all.
Pandora's Box said Graham McNeil's Galita, the brain jar robot from the Gods of Mars trilogy, is so creepy and threatening.
Sounds like a good villain, never heard of it.
Dan Abnett's Lyja Ku, a truly evil guardsman from Gaunt's Ghost. I felt real hate and animosity.
Ooh.
And Tzeentch, you're just a part of his unknowable schemes. Yeah, Tzeentch has got the most kind of tricksy things going on, I suppose, out of all the Chaos Gods.
Yeah.
Somber Mine said for AOS, Malekith, Heimlich, Kemler, and Nagash. And for 40k, Horus and all the traitor Primarchs, except Magnus, because he did nothing wrong. Erebus and Abaddon. Dragon Prince Rob said Malus Darkblade. Yeah, he was a cool character.
Oh, the cold one, yeah.
Thankwall.
Yep.
And Constant Drachenfels. Speaking of Drachenfels, the Drachenfels book is coming back out as part of the Warhammer Horror, if you want some old world vampire action going on.
Was he a Blood Knight or something?
Yeah. Gildan Grotlovstern says Erebus, Malkador, for being accomplice to the Emperor of Mankind. And, yeah, the Emperor of Mankind number one.
Is that Matt Salter?
Yeah. Trogboss, oh, this is, the heresy's getting deeper. Trogboss Ming says, Sigmar, the soul thief. Sigmar, the tyrant. Sigmar. Dan B says, Thankwall, Erebus, and Manfred. Yeah, Manfred was a cool character.
Manfred, yeah, he was a bit tragic. Was he the one? There was one that was mental, and there was also one that was just, he had the love of his life, and the love of his life died. The human stole the ring, didn't he? And
yeah,
that kept him mortal.
Yeah, the Van Karstein ring.
Yeah, but there was one that was also like mental.
I think that was his father.
Conrad
was
crazy,
Conrad von Karstein, yeah.
He was the blood crazy one. Yeah, Manfred. Yeah, Manfred, he was
just right. Misunderstood. Yeah. Ollie Grimwood says the Beast. No, I've not read the Beast series. The Beast Rises.
He's the Orc warlord from the 32nd millennium or something.
Yeah,
he turns up in a big. There's a big, basically Death Star planet with the like a big orc glyph face on it. It's well cool.
Lorgar. He's not been mentioned, but again, he was influenced by Erebus, wasn't he? Yeah. And the Night Haunter.
Conrad Curse.
Yeah. Ed Brown says, Luft Huron, Nagash, and the Emperor. There was a lot of heresy in the...
There's an awful lot of heresy.
Andy Wood says, Manfred von Karstein, Archeo from the Blood Angels Omnibus.
I don't know that.
And Cypher, question mark.
Yeah, ooh. Well...
Office Painter says Manfred von Karstein, Lionel Johnson, and Jago Savatrian. I don't know that character. Lehman Puss says Erebus, Erebus, and Erebus, with an honourable mention for Magnus. Magnus did nothing wrong. Magnus is innocent. Chris from the North Wales Open says Erebus, Abaddon, and Tom Kirby. Old CEO of Games Workshop. Ed Smith says Drachenfels, Pontius Claw, and... Asdrubal Vect. Vect's a cool character.
Vect was one of my... I like Vect. He's got an interesting story as well because he was around at the fall. And he was a nothing. He was a commoner and he sort of rose to the ranks. And how can you not sort of, like, even if he's a villain, appreciate the fact that if one of his rivals annoys him, he just lands a spaceship on them.
Yeah. That's one way of dealing with arguments.
I also liked his rule where...
I can't remember if this was 7th edition, he had a rule where normally you steal initiative on a 6, but he steals initiative on a 4, and it just had a little bit underneath it. Turns out he had it all along.
Amazing. Jonathan Eklund says Skarsnik. Yeah, why haven't we not mentioned Skarsnik?
Yeah, he's actually mentioned a little bit, like an honourable mention in the Gloomspike Codex, like as a legend of the Gloomspike Goblins.
Nagash and Grimgore, some love for Grimgore there. Matt B says Angron. Good old Angry Ron with his butcher's nails. Nagash and Argul Tull.
Argul
Tull. Is he an
Emperor's Children guy, is he?
No, I thought he was Thousand Sons, wasn't he? Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Carl McKenna says Lorgar, Hur and Blackheart, and the Emperor.
Again?
Simon says Samus, Fulgrim, and the God Emperor of Mankind. JB says Nagash, Lucius the Eternal, who is properly mental and sadistic. He's a nasty chap.
He's a good villain.
And Ahriman.
He's a bit like Heath Ledger's Joker, isn't he?
He is a bit, isn't he? David Shepherd says Erebus, he got the party started. That he did. Vect, who is as evil as two Skeletors. And Samus, Demon Prince of the Runestorm, Samus will gnaw on your bones. And then Steve Price says, Drachenfels, Nagash and Lorgar. So, basically, what we're saying is that the main bad guy in all of the Warhammer worlds is the Emperor of Mankind. Conclusive evidence there.
Can you save that? We need to submit that to the Inquisition, that tweet feed.
My goodness. There was some controversial ones in there. I think even more controversial than the Emperor being mentioned so many times was Magnus being mentioned twice. Dearie me. Next three's top three is going to be our top three rules
What rules have you always loved? Do you miss? Are your current favourites in the current rule sets?
Now, we're not just talking re-roll auras, are we?
No, if you really like re-roll
any rule you like. Any rule from the big rule books, from the codexes, from data sheets, war scrolls.
Yeah, so let us know, fire them over to us at Sprues and Brews on Twitter, or you can go on to facebook.com/Sprues and Brews, comment on there, or comment on the website. If you do like listening to this podcast, do let us know and make sure you're subscribing, and we'll have more hot news for you on spruesandbrews.com very soon. But until next week, that wraps up this podcast, so we shall bid you farewell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.